So, Judges 1 through 3. We started on this in our last class. We got down to section 1 and went through a little bit of it. So we'll just review a little bit of that and then pick up where we left off. We noticed that, you know, in verses 1 through 18, we stated that, right before that, we saw that they were having success. So we know what that says about Israel at that time. So they were, if they're having favor, then they are doing what is good in the sight of God, if He's allowing them success. We've seen that term over and over. We saw it a lot in the book of Joshua. And in verses 1 through 18 of Judges, that's, we're seeing that as well. If you'll remember in verse 3, we mentioned something that, because it started off talking about, you know, this was right, verse 1, right after Joshua had died, and then the sons of Israel inquired of the Lord, and basically they were saying, who shall go up first against the Canaanites? And then verse 3, we see this idea that territory was allotted. So it said, Judah said to Simeon, his brother, come up with me into the territory allotted me. And then at the end, it says the territory allotted you, talking about Simeon. So we saw that in the last class. But we also talked about that this isn't saying that the promises hadn't been fulfilled, because we've already looked at that. The promises have been fulfilled. But when we left class, I mentioned two verses. So let's turn over to Exodus 23 first. Exodus 23. We're going to look at verses 29 and 30. But before we look at that, you know, one thing we ended the class with was this idea that the promises were fulfilled, but God's promise was not that they would possess all the land immediately, and then that it will be little by little. So if we look at Exodus 23, 29 through 30, it says, I will not drive them out before you in a single year, that the land may not become desolate, and the beasts of the field become too numerous for you. I will drive them out before you little by little until you become fruitful and take possession of the land. And if we go over to Deuteronomy 7:22, we're going to see a similar idea. Deuteronomy 7:22 says, and the Lord your God will clear away these nations before you little by little. You will not be able to put an end to them quickly, lest the wild beasts grow too numerous for you. So it was going to be little by little, but that didn't mean that the promise hadn't been fulfilled. And we'll see something, we'll have more to say about that here in just a second. But so as we stated, as far as the promises, they had been given to Israel. You know, they had been given the land, and these promises were fulfilled. It's, you know, it's important for us to recognize that, because there's some that would not agree with that. There's some that are going to try to use that idea that, you know, because there are those that would say that the nation and the land promises were not fulfilled. And I'm sure that's some things that Rocky will probably be touching on when he gets into premillennialism. And from what I understand, they say that Israel will still has to be restored to a great nation and receive the land that's promised. So recognizing that these promises have already been fulfilled is very important. If you think back a class or two when we were in Joshua, in Joshua 21, you know, we stated some of these things. Joshua 21, we'll look at 43 through 45, just to make this point. Joshua 21, 43 through 45. It says, "So the Lord gave Israel all the land which he had sworn to give to their fathers, and they possessed it and lived in it. And the Lord gave them rest on every side, according to all that he had sworn to their fathers, and no one of all their enemies stood before them. The Lord gave them all their enemies into their hand. Not one of the good promises which the Lord had made to the house of Israel failed. All came to pass." And not only in that section of 21, if you remember in Joshua, if you remember the next section in 22 when it was talking about the eastern tribes, you see that as well. Because if you look at 22, 3 through 4, you know, if you remember what was going on, that the two and a half tribes, you know, they were to fight with their brothers. And it says, "You have not," verse 3, "you have not forsaken your brothers these many days to this day, but have kept the charge of the commandment of the Lord your God. And now the Lord your God has given rest to your brothers. And he spoke to them, therefore, turn now and go to your tents, to the land of your possession, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you beyond the Jordan." And also verse 9 said, "And the sons of Reuben and the sons of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh returned home and departed from the sons of Israel at Shiloh, which is the land of Canaan, to go to the land of Gilead, to the land of their possession, which they had possessed, according to the command of the Lord through Moses." So we see they were not going to return to that land until these things have been fulfilled, and now it said that these things were fulfilled, and they're now returning to their land. And also, the next chapter over, 23. In verses 1 and 2, it says, "It came about after many days, when the Lord had given rest to Israel from all their enemies on every side, and Joshua was old, advanced in years, that Joshua called for all Israel, for their elders, for their heads, for their judges, and their officers, and said to them, I am old and advanced in years." And then if you jump up to verse 14, it says, "Now behold, today I am going the way of all the earth, and you know in all your hearts and in all your souls that not one word of all the good words which the Lord your God spoke concerning you has failed. All have been fulfilled for you, not one of them has failed. And it shall come about that just as all the good words which the Lord your God spoke to you have come upon you, so the Lord will bring upon you all the threats until he has destroyed you from off this good land which the Lord your God has given you." So, again, we're seeing this talking about these things being fulfilled. And y'all didn't know we were going to jump back into Joshua so soon, did you? But so now we're done with Joshua. That was just to kind of so we could bring out that point. But let's look over at Nehemiah for a second as well. Nehemiah chapter 9. Nehemiah 9:7. Says, "Thou art the Lord God, who chose Abram and brought him out from Ur of the Chaldees and gave him the name Abraham. And thou didst find his heart faithful before thee and didst make a covenant with him to give him the land of the Canaanite, of the Hittite, of the Amorite, of the Perizzite, the Jebusite, and the Girgashite, to give it to his descendants. And thou hast fulfilled thy promise, for thou art righteous." And down in verse 22 as well. Said, thou didst also give them kingdoms of people or and peoples, and thou didst allot them to them as a boundary. And they took possession of the land of Sihon, the king of Heshbon, and the land of Og, the king of Bashan. And thou didst make their sons numerous as the stars of heaven, and thou didst bring them into the land which thou hadst told their fathers to enter and possess. So their sons entered and possessed the land, and thou didst subdue before them the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites. And thou didst give them into their hand with their kings and their peoples of the land to do with them as they desired. And they captured fertified cities and a fertile land. They took possession of houses full of every good thing, hewn cisterns, vineyards, olive groves, fruit trees in abundance. So they ate, were filled, and grew fat, and reveled in thy great goodness. So we see all of these things have taken place. And that this promise had been fulfilled. Now, just as we were looking at back in Judges 1, as we were looking at verses 1 through 18, you know, we see in this section that there's favor going on. But we start to see a change starting in verse 19 through 36. In this section, note the words. There's some words that are going to reoccur throughout the section. Words like did not drive out and lived among. You're going to see that throughout this section here. And it's talking about the inhabitants of that land. And they were having problems or failure, if you would, in completing the ultimate conquest of the land, you know, that is having the land to themselves. So was this just because they didn't want to drive the people out? I don't know. I don't think so. If you note verse 119, it says, now the Lord was with Judah, and they took possession of the hill country, but they could not drive out the inhabitants of the valley. Now, in this section, it's talking about because of the iron chariots, but as we go on, we're going to see there's another reason why they could not drive this out as well, because there was a reason, there was a purpose. Again, we see these type of statements. It said that they did not drive out, and that's correct. So what causes this change? Why is it that they're not going to be able to do that? And that's going to bring us to our next section. So if you go over to chapter 2, in 2:1, it says that the angel of the Lord speaks to the sons of Israel. So, you know, what does he start with? What does the angel of the Lord say? We're going to... Okay, talking about leading them out of Egypt. And is there, in that little section, you're going to see a term, I guess you could call it a term, over and over. And what I'm talking about is the... I, talking about God. You're going to see I. It says in verse 1, now the angel of the Lord came up from Gilgal to Bochim, and he said, I brought you out of Egypt and led you into the land which I have sworn to your fathers, and I said, I will never break my covenant with you. So we see this emphasis on I, or the Lord. So he talked about this agreement, if you would, that he had with them. And it says in verse 2, it says, as for you, you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of the land. You shall tear down their altars. But you have not obeyed me. What is this you have done? So they were supposed to tear these things down, and they weren't obedient. You know, they weren't supposed to have a share in these things that the inhabitants of the land would do. They wouldn't tear down their altar. So then it says, but you have not obeyed me. So there's emphasis on that. They're not obeying God. And then he questions, what is this you have done? You know, and then you get into verse 3, so it's going to be an explanation. So it's a therefore, or because of this, because of what we just talked about and what you've done. He says, therefore I also said, I will not drive them out before you, but they shall become as thorns in your sides, and their God shall be a snare to you. And then verse 4, and it came about when the angel of the Lord spoke these words to all the sons of Israel, that the people lifted up their voices and they wept. So, they didn't do the things that the Lord had warned them against. And now they're going to start having to deal with some of that. In verses 6 through 10, this section seems to be reflecting back by way of thought or explanation. And it's these are things that are similar to what was stated in Joshua 24. But in Judges 2:7, it says, the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who survived Joshua, who had seen all the great work of the Lord, which he had done in Israel. So these are things that when we started our class off, we saw that a lot. We saw that at the end of Joshua. Some of this being brought up, we saw it again, and we're in chapter 2. Yeah, chapter 2. And in those two places and in 1:1, it also brings up Joshua's death, which we see here in verse 8. So there's some things that are similar, so it seems to be that it's reflecting back or thinking back of some things. And also in verse 9, it talks about where Joshua was buried, and we saw that at the last chapter of Joshua. So these are things kind of looking back in that little section. And it seems to me that it's trying to build up onto something, because it's the idea of those that followed the Lord during the time of Joshua. And those that were the elders that survived that time, you know, they were serving the Lord. And then this is when you're going to start to see a change, and that's what verse 10 is talking about. It says that all the generation also was gathered to their fathers, and this is talking about the older generation. And then it says, and there arose another generation after them. And this is where you see the problem. It said they did not know the Lord, nor yet the work which he had done for Israel. So they didn't know about God. They didn't know about what he had done for Israel. If you consider those kind of things, just for a personal application, where do we run into these kind of problems? If a generation doesn't know God, know about, like here, the God of their fathers, where does that start from?
Their fathers didn't,
okay. So that's something that's important for us to consider, because your children aren't going to learn just by osmosis. It's not going to just happen. And I know a lot of the parents here are diligent in teaching their children, so I'm not saying that they aren't. But that's something good for us to realize, you know, the importance of that duty that we have towards our children, to be able to teach them and to raise them to follow the Lord. That's, you know, if you don't, then you run into these kind of things. And we see here there was a generation that didn't know the Lord and didn't know the things that he had done. So, that's Joshua, not Judges. I was going to say that doesn't look right. In Joshua 24, verse 14, it says, "Now therefore fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. And if it is disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves today whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served, which were beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And we recognize that that was Joshua's speech there. And, you know, where he was saying, "Hey, here's the situation, but me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord." And they go on to say that, yeah, Joshua, we're going to serve the Lord too. And it shows that they did, because that generation did. But that's similar to what we see in Joshua or Judges 2:7. Judges 2:7, when it explained that the people did serve the Lord all the days of Joshua and those elders that followed him. So you could say that some of this section reflects back to those days. And maybe because of that, you have chapter 1, 1 through 18, where they are following God. But then you start seeing that change in verse 19, because they still had success up to chapter 18. But 19 is where you started seeing some changes. And then when you go into the next, well, in chapter 2, the first five verses, you know, some of what we just read, those verses are the reason behind the situation that's going on. Remember, verse 3 says, "Because of this, because of these things, I also said, I will drive them out before you, but they shall become as thorns," or I will not drive them out before you, talking about the inhabitants, "and they shall become as thorns in your sides, and their gods a snare to you." So, in section 6 through 10,
Craig,
yes, sir.
Just a note.
No, sir.
Another thing, it says in verse 11, they took the Lord, they did evil to the Lord, served the Baal, took the Lord. Same thing in 13, took the Lord, served the Baal. You read that, pass on, and you might just think, well, that was just idolatry. Mm-hmm. But religion rises no higher than the God it serves. And when you turn from the God, the true living
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And we also see, too, because the influence, you know, the inhabitants will see some of the influence that that has on them as well. You had a comment, Rocky? Sir. Yes, sir. Good point, Rocky. I see another hand. Yes, ma'am. When you start seeing it going the wrong direction, huh? Were there any, did I see any other hands? No? Okay. Good comments. So verse 10, like what we were talking about, so 6 or 10 talks about Israel's faithfulness and who played a big part in that. When I say 10, I'm talking about 10a. So basically from 6 all the way to 10a, Joshua played a big part in that. And the example that he was and how the generation served the Lord, and then and how you had elders that served the Lord. So kind of to Rocky's point, this leadership. So you see how they were serving the Lord. And then the latter part of verse 10 is where it shows the change. The Joshua's generation served the Lord, but the next generation did not. And then that's when we see this idea that that next generation didn't know the Lord, and they didn't know of the things that he had done. So then we get into our next section, which is 11 through 19. And it's going to describe Israel's unfaithfulness. And then this cycle of apostasy and deliverance. So this section talks about Israel's unfaithfulness and the results of that. And in verse 11, it says, "The sons of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served Baals." And then, like Steve was saying, the term we see this term forsook. Verse 12, it says they forsook, or they gave up, or they abandoned. What did they abandon? What did they forsake? It says the Lord. So verse 12, "And they forsook the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt, and followed other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them, and bowed themselves down to them. Thus they provoked the Lord to anger," because they weren't following him. And we know when they don't follow him, we don't follow him, it provokes anger. We see some of the terms, the anger burned within the Lord. So this provoked anger to the Lord. So what what happens? What does he do about it? Well, before you get to that, actually, verse 13, it says it again. They forsook the Lord and served Baal and the Ashtaroth. And then verse 14 said, and the anger of the Lord burned against Israel, and he gave them into the hands of plunderers who plundered them and sold them into the hands of their enemies around them so that they could no longer stand before their enemies. Now this is going to give, this is kind of an explanation that we're going to build upon when we start getting into chapter 3, verse 7, and following up to chapter 16. Because that's this cycle we were talking about that we saw in 2:19. This, you know, right here it says that because of what they were doing, then the Lord's going to allow these things to happen to them. He's going to allow them to be plundered. He's going to, in this case it says, he's going to sell them to the hands of their enemies. And that's some of the things we're going to see and some of the things we're going to put on your chart when we get to that. So this is kind of building up to that. Two 14b, I put in my notes, I put in there on 2:14b, what does this statement mean? And I also noted to remember Joshua 7:12. And 14b says they could no longer stand before their enemies. Do y'all remember back in Joshua in 7:12 that was talking about Achan? Why could Israel no longer stand before their enemies at that time? Okay, what was the reason for that? What had they had done? Okay, they broke the rules. That was talking about Achan. And remember, all of Israel at one point suffered because of that. And so he wasn't with them. At that point, they weren't going to take their enemy. And we saw that in the first part with Ai. So here in this section, it says they could no longer stand before the enemies. But the idea that the Lord's not with them. So they're not going to have success. And verse 14, as we read, it just said that the Lord gave them into the hands of plunderers. You know, so they're not going to have success. He's going to allow them to suffer. He gave them into the hands of plunderers who plundered them. And 15b says, not only were they distressed, it says they were severely distressed. So this wasn't fun, not something that was enjoyable, and it wasn't meant to be. So verse 16 says, Then the Lord raised up judges who delivered them from the hands of those who plundered them. Now, 16 through 19, we discussed a little bit in detail on our introduction to Judges. So I'm not going to put a whole lot. Yes, ma'am.
In New King James, it says, nevertheless, the Lord raised up judges. So
okay.
To me, that means even though they had done all of this, he's still going to raise up judges to take care of them.
Yeah, he still listened to them or their cry. And, yeah, very, very loving. yes. So yes, he's going to raise up these judges for them. It says who delivered them from the hands of those who plundered them, and then you know again it says yet they didn't listen to their judges, for they played the harlot after other gods, and they bowed down to them. So that's the term that's used as worship. You know, they bowed down to them. They worshiped these other gods. And they turned aside quickly from the way in which their fathers had walked. You know, their fathers were obeying the commandments of the Lord. And this generation, they're not doing as their fathers did. And then again, 18, it talks about the judges again, that the Lord raised them up for them, for Israel. And it also said the Lord was with the judge and delivered them from the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. So when we start talking about these judges, we see here, number one, the Lord raised them up to be a deliverer. I see Alex, give me just a second. So the Lord raised them up to be a deliverer. And the Lord was with this judge. He gave the judge success. Okay, he delivered them from the hand of their enemies. And the Lord did this for the judges all the days of that judge as he lived. And then we'll see that emphasis when we get into these charts, because as soon as that judge, whichever one we're looking at, as soon as they died, there they go again. And that's why we're calling it a cycle. It just happens over and over. Yes, sir, Alex?
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say.
See, I... Just went right back to it, huh? Yeah, so we're gonna see that idea, and that was kind of explained in this section here, verse 19. But it came about when the judge died that they would turn back and act more corruptly than their fathers. And the way I'm understanding that, because we see this cycle, it's happening over and over. You have a span of years, and then they do it again, and they do it again. So what I'm understanding here when it says their fathers, I'm thinking of the ones that the generation before them that wasn't doing what they should as soon as the judges died. So they were being more corrupt than those before them is what the way I'm taking that. But so it said that they act more corruptly than their fathers in following other gods to serve them and bow down to them again. That's a term of worship. And they did not abandon their practices or their stubborn ways. So then, again, verse 20, the anger of the Lord burned against Israel. And he said, because this nation has transgressed my covenant, which I commanded their fathers, and has not listened to my voice, I also will no longer drive out before them any of the nations which Joshua left when he died. So this describes this cycle that we're going to see. like we mentioned in the introduction, going to see this things that are described here going over and over and over. And that's going to start in, like I said, chapter 3, verse 7. You're going to see this idea of sin, suffering, supplication, and salvation. And, you know, some call it the four S's, easy to remember. So, how am I doing on time? Not good. Okay. Just briefly, we'll look at Nehemiah 9 again real quick, briefly, different point. We looked over in this section when it came to the promises being fulfilled. You know, we looked at 9, 7 through 8 and 23, or 22 through 25. But note verse 26. 26 through 28 of Nehemiah 9 says, but they became disobedient and rebelled against thee, and cast thy law behind their backs, and killed the prophets, and had admonished them, or who had admonished them, so that they might return to thee, and they committed great blasphemies. Therefore, thou didst deliver them into the hand of their oppressors who oppressed them. But when they cried to thee in the time of their distress, thou didst hear from heaven, and according to thy great compassion, thou didst give them deliverers who delivered them from the hand of their oppressors. But as soon as they had rest, they did evil again before thee. Therefore, thou didst abandon them to the hand of their enemies, so that they ruled over them. When they cried again to thee, thou didst hear hear from heaven, and many times thou didst rescue them according to thy compassion. So we see this very idea that what we're looking at here in Judges, you know, this cycle that's happening over and over, you know, that God would send a deliverer, and then, you know, before the deliverer, because of the anger of the Lord, you know, he would allow them to be oppressed. And they cry out to the Lord. And then they send a deliverer. And then as soon as that deliverer dies, it starts all over again. So I know I'm kind of being a little repetitive on that, but that's what we're going to see. It's a cycle that's happening over and over. In chapter 2 of Judges, verse 20, Judges 2:20. Through 3:6. This is where the Lord states he will no longer drive them out before any of the nations, which Joshua left when he died. And that's one of the statements that we saw a lot when we were in chapter 1 in verses 19 through through 36. So what reason does he state in this section as to why he isn't driving them out? And I'm sorry, I heard something. Okay. So in order to test them, and you about to buzz me? Okay. So we will pick up in the next class and we will talk more about why God did this. So thank you for your comments and your attention.